English. Are you ready?
Yes.
What time? What time did you start today?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Ah, so you must be very tired already.
Yeah.
Very tired already. And now you get to listen to me in English for 1 hour. So maybe at 2 o'clock, maybe you'll be very tired. So, but it's okay. To make it easier, I have prepared a cheat sheet. So even if you are too sleepy, don't want to listen, can't understand, just fall asleep, it's okay, because you can check, just check the notes and everything is on here. Summer in Tokyo is very hot, so in the summer I just sleep all summer, that's it. Today it's very rare. It's very rare that I leave the house in summer, so you're very lucky. Anyway, so first of all, thank you to Misao-san for inviting me here today. Thank you, thank you. So, do you know who I am? That's a good question. That's a good question. Normally, I talk to people who already know me from YouTube or from the internet, so this is the first time. My name is Julian Northbrook. I am from the UK, but I've been in Japan for, 11 years now. I speak English, of course. English is my first language. I speak Japanese as a second language. And importantly, for today, I don't speak French at all. You probably studied English at junior high school, maybe high school, university, whatever, in Japan. You studied English. Well, I lived in the UK, grew up in the UK, so we studied French. 5 years. British junior high school. Junior high school in England is 5 years. Different to Japan. Japan is 3 years. England is 5 years. I studied French for 5 years. And I can say in French, je ne parle pas français. I don't understand French. Finished. Pointless. 5 years. 5 years. And I can say, I don't speak French. I don't understand French. French classes in the UK, maybe very similar to Japanese junior high school English classes. We have a textbook. We studied grammar rules. We memorized grammar rules. Determiner plus noun plus adjective. You can make the sentence. But I couldn't make the sentence at all. And when in my third year of junior high school, I went on a homestay. I went to France and I stayed with a French family for a homestay. I couldn't speak a word of French. Couldn't speak French, didn't understand French. Had no idea what was going on. Luckily for me, my host mother was really good at English. And here was me. I was a terrible, terrible, terrible student. I didn't study. I didn't do my homework. I didn't like French. I went on a homestay because I thought, great, 2 weeks holiday, 2 weeks off school, no classes. So I went for a bad reason. I didn't speak French. I didn't understand French. My host mother spoke English. Great, no problem. So my host mother thinks, who is this British guy? He's either lazy or he's stupid or both. I don't know. But very quickly she realized I wasn't going to speak French. So she spoke English. She spoke very good English, but over the 2 weeks, I started to notice although she spoke very fluent English, English that was very easy to understand, it was kind of strange. It wasn't the same as the English that we spoke in England. It wasn't the words. The words were fine. Her grammar was fine. Pronunciation, no problem. I couldn't understand what is wrong, what is strange about her English. And I never understood at that time why her English was different until, how many years later? 6 years later, when I came here. I came to Japan. I came to Japan on a working holiday. I didn't plan to live here. I lived in the UK. I went to university, graduated university, didn't know what to do. So I thought, okay, I'll go to Japan, working holiday, spend a year in Japan. I didn't speak Japanese when I came here. So I got a job teaching English. And again, I started to notice that my students, even though they spoke great English, their English was different, not the same to British people. Then I met people from America, from Canada, from all over the world. And I noticed again that these people in America, the way they speak English is different to the way that we speak English in the UK. And this really interested me. I kind of thought, what is it? What is different? And then one day I realized that the big difference was not the words, was not the phrases, the pronunciation, the grammar, but the culture, not the language, but what happens in here, the way that we think. When I did the French homestay, my homestay mother was an excellent English speaker, but she was a French thinker. Her thinking was based on French culture, French values, French ideals, the French way of living life. When I came to Japan, here it's the same. You're all Japanese, I think. Your values are based on Japanese values, Japanese culture, Japanese knowledge. And that is different to the way that we use English or think in the UK, in America, in, say, India, the Philippines, wherever in the world you go, we all think in a different way. So to put things simply, in order to speak a language well, in order to speak a language effectively, in an international situation, just having language is not enough. Just knowing words, vocabulary, grammar, phrases is not enough. You need more than that. In fact, you need three things to speak a language well. This is something that I call the LKC triangle. And incidentally, it's what my book is all about. You can't buy this book because this is the only copy that exists. You know why. I had many, many problems printing and publishing this book. So what I'm talking about here today is kind of a summary, a very short summary of everything from here. So you need three things to speak a language well. First of all, you need language. And the example I give here is of going to a bike shop. Let's have a show of hands. Does anybody cycle? Is anybody like an enthusiastic cycler? Anybody do it professionally? No? No. Several months ago. No. Well, months ago. A year ago now. A year and a half ago now. My bicycle that I had been riding for 5-6 years broke. I banged the front wheel into the side of the wall and it bent, and that was it. Finished. I took it to the bike shop and I said, "Can you fix this for me?" And they said, "No, it'll cost more money to fix than you paid for the bike. So you should just buy a new bike." So I thought, okay, it's time. Time to buy a new bicycle. And who is from Tokyo? Let's have a show of hands again. Who is from Tokyo? Only one person. Ah, two people. No. Is anybody familiar with the area Yanaka? Yanaka. Near Nishinippori. About 10-15 minutes walk from Nishinippori station. Yanaka is my favorite part of Tokyo. It's a very interesting area. Lots of very old traditional buildings that they kept that survived. They've restored them, and it's a very, very beautiful area. And in Yanaka, there's a bike shop called Tokyo Bike that looks really cool on the outside. So I'd walked past this place many, many, many times. So when I needed to buy a new bike, I thought, aha, I know where I'll go. I'll go to this place in Yanaka. My bike before then was just a normal Mama Chari type bike. Yeah, just a normal bike. I'd never had an expensive bike. I'd never ridden a road bike, a nice bike. So I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect when I went in. But I thought, yeah, it's a bike. I'll go in the shop, I'll buy a bike, and I'll cycle it home. No. I go into the bike and I'm confronted with the bike shop assistant. And she says to me, "Hi, can I help you?" Of course, the conversation is in Japanese. So I thought, you know, it's no problem. I discussed with her, said I want to buy a bike. And she starts to ask me, "What kind of bike do you want? What sort of bike? What sort of handlebars do you want? What kind of wheels do you want? What kind of frame do you want?" Suddenly there are all these options and different ways to build the bike, and the discussion just got more and more and more and more difficult. And suddenly I had no idea what she's talking about anymore. I thought, just buy a bike, go home. But no, actually you have to choose all the parts and they custom build it for you, and then 2 weeks later you collect the bike and then you can take it home. So this situation was a really good illustration of this idea, of this principle. So I've used it as an example here. In order to have this discussion about the bike, I needed language. Of course, if you don't have language, if you don't have the words and the phrases and the expressions that you need to say the things that you want to say, then you can't speak. You can't say something if you don't have the word. If I don't know that this is a bottle, I can only say this thing. You need language, of course, but it's just the beginning. You also need knowledge. And for me in this situation, I lacked knowledge. I knew nothing about bikes. I don't know how a bike works. I don't know how a bike is put together. You have the straight handlebars, and then you have the handlebars that kind of curve. I don't even know what those are called. What's the difference? Why are they curved? What do they do? How do you use them? When they asked me, "How many gears do you need?" I don't know. Gears? 2? 10? 100? I don't know. I don't know. What is the difference between 4 gears and 12 gears? I couldn't talk about it because I didn't know about it. The lady asked me about Bradley Wiggins. Do you know who Bradley Wiggins is? No, I didn't know either. Apparently, he's a very famous British cyclist, British champion. I didn't know that. So here's me with this Japanese shop assistant. Oh, yeah, Bradley Wiggins. Yeah. No idea what he's talking about. I don't know. Then, of course, there's the culture. People who really love cycling. It's a culture. Cycle enthusiasts have their own way of talking. They have their own slang, their own phrases and expressions to talk about bikes. And then, of course, there's the country's culture to do with cycling as well. We don't need to get into that. Road laws, for example, in Japan are totally different to England. In England, you can't cycle on the pavement. Everybody must cycle on the road. They must wear a helmet. It's very different to Japan. It's a part of culture as well. So that situation went quite horribly wrong. I couldn't have the conversation well, not because of language, not just because of language, but because I didn't have the knowledge that I needed, because I didn't have the understanding of the culture that I needed. So what I'm going to do, we're doing quite well for time, is I'm going to go over these points in detail now and talk about language, what kind of language you might need, how do you learn that language, what is the best kind of language to focus on to learn. Then very briefly I'm going to talk about the knowledge part, because this is kind of easy for you guys, I think. And then, in a little bit more detail, I'm going to talk about culture. Hopefully I can do that in 40 minutes. We'll see. She's laughing because she knows I always talk for too long. For you guys, an hour is maybe a long time to hear me speaking English. But for me, I could talk about this for days. And days and days and never stop and never get tired. So it's kind of dangerous to let me speak. Language. I think the first most obvious question is how much language do you need to speak English well? Native speakers actually really don't know much English. You'd be surprised at how little we know of our language. And of course, it's the same for you with Japanese as well. It's the same for all people with all languages. English has about a million words. Different researchers have different ideas. They say slightly different things. But in general, we can say English has 1 million words. Some very clever linguists worked out that native speakers, from the time they are born, learn on average 1,000 words a year for about 25 years. So the average native speaker who goes to university, graduates university at about 25, and at that point they know about 25,000 words. It's quite a lot. Sure, it's a lot of words, but actually that's only 2.5% of the words in English. So of all of the language in English, native speakers actually only know a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of that. Which is kind of important because in my experience, and I was the same, with Japanese, when I was learning Japanese and struggling with Japanese in the beginning, my thinking was always that if only I learn more vocabulary, then I'll be able to speak better. And for a couple of years, I did this, and just I need more vocabulary, more words, then I can express myself better. But even after I had passed the JLPT, the Japanese Language Proficiency Test, I passed it at the highest level. I memorized a lot of vocabulary to pass that test. But even then, I still couldn't speak the language well. I couldn't use all the words that I knew. It's the same with English. You probably heard the stories of people who have TOEIC scores of 880 points, like super high TOEIC scores. But they can't speak English. They can't make proper sentences. They can't understand what people say. The reason why is because we don't need that much vocabulary. Remember, native speakers only know a tiny amount of the vocabulary in English. And of that tiny amount, most of it is an even smaller amount. We can say that there are basically three types of language. The what we call core language, the super common words and phrases and expressions that get used absolutely everywhere. Hi, hello, how are you? Excuse me, could you help me with this? Would you show me whatever? Then we can say that there is topic-specific language. For you guys, this is going to be the language of physiotherapy, the language that you would use in a conference, in a seminar, in a training session, if you were to do it in English. For me, it's the language of English education, of language learning. In this situation, it was the language of bike maintenance. Words like cog, chain, saddle, handlebars. This is very useful language, but only for people in this specific situation. In physiotherapy, you probably don't use the word cog that often. Or chain, how's your chain today? It's, you know, it just doesn't, you don't use it in conversation. Then we have the third type of language, which is just everything else. And you can just forget about that. It's almost everything is not that common, not that useful for most people. So you just don't need it. We'll come to how you actually work this out and get it in a moment. But the point that I want to make here is that very few people have a vocabulary problem. Most people already have more vocabulary than what they need. The point is not how much you have, but how well you combine the words that you have to make bigger pieces of language. This is what I call chunking. A chunk is like a big fat piece of something. This is actually my area of research, of specialty. I did a PhD in psycholinguistics. This was what I studied and researched, was chunking. Chunking is very important, and it's super important for you guys, because when native speakers speak, we used to think that they used grammar and they used words. That's how we learn English at school. You get taught grammar rules, and you get taught add words to the grammar rules, and then you can make language. When I learned French, the first thing we were taught was nouns, things like le chat, le chien, le cochon, animal names, the cat, the dog, the pig. That's the only one I remember of all things. And then we get told, well, you've got the noun, and to add an adjective to it, you just add it onto the end. In English, we have determiner, adjective, noun. In French, it's determiner, noun, adjective. Go on then, speak French. Are you confused? Determiner, adjective, noun, what? Doesn't work like that. And of course, what happens? Everybody gets it wrong. and it gets more and more complicated, and then people don't really know what they're doing anymore. Native speakers actually don't speak like that most of the time. We know this because the human brain actually isn't that powerful. It is. We have a lot of memory, but it's like an old computer that has very little processing power. And the speed that native speakers speak, if I was to talk like this all the time, and I'm always using grammar rules and adding words, my brain would be going crazy trying to keep up. We've got this rule and we're trying to process and compute everything. It would just overheat. We can't speak like that. Not only that, but native speakers say things that sound natural. We never say pleasant first half of the day to you. Or in fact, now it would be pleasant second half of the day to you. We don't say that. We say good morning, good afternoon. We don't say, excuse me, could you aid me in this task? We say, could you help me with this? But why? Both are grammatical. Pleasant second half of the day to you is perfectly grammatical. But it sounds really, really strange. The reason is chunking. Native speakers actually store chunks of language, complete phrases, complete expressions, long, big pieces of language. We store it in memory, just like that. And then when we speak, we just pull it out, and we speak in chunks. This is why we can speak so fluently. Suddenly, if I say, could you help me with this? That's six words. But actually, it's not six words. It's only one. Could you help me with this? That's why we can speak fluently and why we can speak naturally. Thank you for the water. So the point I want to make here is that for you guys, speaking English as a second language, learning to speak English, learning to understand English, what you really want to be doing is not learning like we were taught in school. You don't really want to be learning grammar rules and vocabulary, but instead you want to learn language in the way that human beings naturally use language, as chunks. Instead of learning words, you want to be learning phrases, expressions, chunks of words. Noticing the chunks that we use in everyday conversation so that when you speak, you can just pull them out as is and use them like that. This is also really important because you actually can't understand what a word means based on just the word. For example, the word cause means to make something to happen. But what you can't understand from that is that it's only used in bad situations. You cause an injury, you cause a problem. But you don't cause happiness. You don't cause someone to smile. This is because it's only used in negative chunks. It's only used in chunks like cause a problem, cause an accident. So learning in chunks helps you to understand how words are really used in context, in real life. And that's kind of the problem with the way we learn for tests and things like TOEIC and AKEN, or in my case, the Japanese proficiency test. Because we just learn lists of words, we don't know how they're used in context in real life. Which brings me very nicely to example-based learning. I've kind of talked about some of this already. We can skip a bit of this. Anybody seen the film Captain America: Civil War? The Marvel film. Has anybody seen it? Captain America? No? I have three children. So my kids love the superhero films. And Captain America is one of them. It's a superhero film. I like it, actually. I like it. I pretend I watch it for the children. Yeah, the kids want to watch this film. But actually, it's me. It's me who usually wants to watch it. In that film, there's a really great scene which can teach you a very important lesson about learning languages. You can see this picture here I put there just to for people who haven't seen it. This guy with a funny head is called Vision, and he's a robot. And the girl stood next to him is called Wanda. She's a Hungarian girl. In this particular scene, I forget why, but she is kind of sad. She's feeling sad. She's feeling down. She's feeling depressed. So her friend, Vision, the robot, decides that he's going to cheer her up. What's the best way to cheer her up? Cooking. Let's cook her something. So he says, okay, she's Hungarian. I'll cook her some traditional Hungarian food. Paprikash. Ever heard of that? Paprikash. I've never had it. It's a Hungarian dish made from paprika. Sounds great. Only remember, Vision is a robot. He doesn't eat food. He's never eaten food. He's never eaten any food, let alone paprikash. He has no idea what food should taste like, should smell like, should even look like. So we have this robot who has never eaten food before making paprikash. But it's okay. He has the rules. He has a recipe. He's got the recipe there and he's reading it. Okay, so we add some onions. The onions, okay, chuck them in. Pinch of paprika. Pinch. Pinch of paprika goes in. How good do you think this cooking is going to be? Good? Remember, he's never eaten food before. So Wanda tries it and she just says, oh my God, I don't know what's in this. But it's not paprikash. But of course, I mean, it's obvious. A robot who has never eaten food before is not going to be able to cook it well because he doesn't know what the final dish should look like, should taste like, should be like. This is kind of the same as the way people learn languages. And especially with the traditional grammar rules and vocabulary. And this was the problem with me learning French, le chat, le noir chat, which is wrong in French, the cat black, we say the black cat. It all gets confused because I don't know what French should sound like, should look like. The way we learn is kind of backwards. We tend to start with words, we memorize the words, then we memorize the grammar rules. Sometimes we start with the grammar rules and then we memorize the words. And then we're expected to produce language from this. But this is like the robot cooking food. How can we produce language properly, naturally, if we have no idea what it's supposed to sound like, to be like in the end? So the way I teach is actually the other way around. It's backwards. What I call example-based learning means taking examples of real language, samples of actual conversation, and instead of learning the language and trying to speak it, forget about speaking the language. Instead, just look at what other people are doing and copy it. For you guys, that could be something like, say you want to help a patient and you need to do it in English. It could be something like finding training DVDs or training manuals that are produced for native English speakers and using those and copying the language that you hear. When I started to teach English in Japan, I taught at a secondary school. And they asked me, can you teach in Japanese? The answer was no, I can't. Can you learn to teach in Japanese? Sure. The materials that I used to do that were actually podcasts for Japanese people learning English. But I studied the language that the teachers used to explain the English as an example and basically copied that in my own classes. Okay, we should speed up a bit actually. Okay, knowledge. We're going to skip over this quite quickly because there isn't really that much to say. I mean, put simply, you can't talk about what you don't know anything about. That sounds kind of obvious. In the bike shop example, I didn't know about bikes. I couldn't talk about bikes. For the most part, this is not a problem for you. I mean, for example, my speciality, my research area is psycholinguistics. I could talk about psycholinguistics in English, Japanese, no problem whatsoever. I could talk about it pretty fluently in English and in Japanese. Probably I could speak about it in Japanese better than most Japanese people. But that's because psycholinguistics is my area of specialty. Physiotherapy? I haven't got a clue. I couldn't speak about physiotherapy in Japanese, but I couldn't speak about it in English either, because it's not my area of specialization, but it is yours. For most people, when it comes to their jobs, they can speak fairly easily. It's not really a problem. Where things start to get difficult is the small talk, chit-chat, the casual situations. You have a conference in English, the conference is fine, then everybody goes out for a beer and suddenly, what are you talking about? The whole thing just breaks down and we don't know what's happening anymore. The key here is to have interesting stories to tell. We all have interesting things to talk about. We all have stories to tell. I was going to tell you a story about when I was in China, but we don't have time. I'm going to go over otherwise. But just do more. Basically, the more stories you have to tell, the more interesting you tend to be. I'm going to skip over this part, I think, because I want to talk about culture. And this is, the knowledge part is pretty easy, I think. And it's not that relevant to you, so. Culture. Culture is the big one. Culture is the difficult part. This is where things get really tricky, in my experience. When you make a mistake with your language, if I make a grammar mistake or I use the wrong word, generally people don't actually care that much. I mean, native speakers make mistakes all the time with their own language. We really don't care that much about pronunciation mistakes or grammar mistakes. Cultural mistakes, on the other hand, are quite different. Cultural mistakes are where people get upset. Cultural mistakes are what start war. Understanding people's culture, I believe, is the most important part of learning a language and using a language well. What is culture? Culture is very, very complicated. In one way, it's very simple, but in another way, it's very complicated. If you imagine like a pair of glasses that have pink lenses, I put these glasses on and suddenly the whole world turns pink. The world looks hot and passionate and romantic. And then I take the pink glasses off and I change them for a blue pair. Suddenly the world looks very different. It's the same world. I'm looking at the same people in the same place, but now they look cold, icy, maybe a little bit depressed, like Picasso's blue paintings. Again, same world, very different ways of looking. I call these glasses with the colored lenses your culture glasses. The only difference is that the culture glasses that you are wearing now were put on when you were born, and you can never take them off. You can try to take them off, and you can change them, but you can never completely remove them. Basically, everything that you say, when you speak English, you say it through your own culture, through your own understanding, with your own cultural glasses. But when I hear what you've said, I understand it not with your culture, but with my culture. And this is where communication breakdowns tend to happen. Because you say one thing, meaning one thing, I understand it in a totally different way. I mean, humor is the perfect example. If you've ever tried to make a joke in English, it probably doesn't work. I remember when I was first in Japan, I was working at a secondary school, and I was walking to work one morning with an umbrella. It was pouring down with rain outside. It was horrible. It was wet and it was cold. The weather was terrible. One of the teachers was stood by the gate at the school, and I said in Japanese, "Good morning, lovely weather today." And she looked at me just like, "What? What are you talking about? Lovely weather." And just then another teacher came past and, "Oh, hi, hi, hi." And thankfully for her, she had an excuse not to talk to me anymore. But I felt very embarrassed because I realized, this humor doesn't translate well. In the UK, however, that's how we speak. British people are very ironic, quite sarcastic. When it's sunny outside, we complain. "Oh, the weather's too hot, it's terrible today." When it's cold and wet outside, we say, "Oh, wow, the weather's amazing today." Everything is said ironically, with a kind of backwards meaning. That doesn't translate well into Japanese, because we have different culture glasses. When I said it understanding that I'm saying it in an ironic, humorous way. Weather is terrible today, so I'll say it's great today. Doesn't make any sense if you don't know that. And to the teacher I spoke to, it didn't make any sense. Humor is hard. Humor doesn't translate well. But it's not just humor. It goes much, much, much deeper than that. What we think of as common knowledge, 常識, common sense, actually isn't common at all. Because actually your common knowledge is totally different to my common knowledge. For example, in Japan, it took me a very long time to get used to the fact that Japanese people go to the doctors very often. You catch a cold, got a sore throat, go to the doctor. The doctor greets me with a smile. "Oh, you've got a sore throat. Oh, you must be feeling really bad. Let's write a prescription of medicine for you. Take this medicine and you'll feel better." That's how things are done in Japan. In the United Kingdom, if you go to your GP, your general practitioner, your doctor, with a cold, he'll say, "What are you doing here? Don't waste my time. Don't come here with a cold. Go home, sleep. What do you expect me to do about it? Medicine for a cold? The best medicine is sleep. Just go home." Very, very different way of doing things. Of course, it's to do with the different systems. The British medical system is public and the Japanese is privatized, and you know, it's but it's all a part of the culture, different ways of doing things. In Germany, and I think Japan as well, Germany and Japan tend to be very similar culturally, by the way. In Germany, time is absolutely fixed. If I say 1 p.m., I mean 1 p.m. My children, however, went to the Indian International School in Kotoku, quite close to here. When they say 1 p.m. at the Indian school, they mean it could be 12 p.m., it could be 3 p.m., it's just, you know, it's sometime early afternoon. Time is totally flexible in Indian culture, to the point where it drove us absolutely insane. They'd have a sports day. What time does sports day start? 10 a.m. You get there at 10 a.m. and there's nobody there. Because when they say we're starting at 10 a.m., they mean we're starting sometime late morning, when people eventually arrive. This is all to do with the culture, and it affects the way that you communicate. Because if you are doing business with somebody from India and they say 10 o'clock, do they mean 10 o'clock? Maybe yes, but maybe no. It's something that you've got to check. Whereas if you're Indian and you do business with people in Germany, it would be very, very silly to keep your own culture and to ignore the way the Germans do things. Humor, I've already talked about that. Conversation style as well is also another very important part of culture. We don't really have time to go into this in detail, but I've kind of squeezed in a little chart here. This is from a great book that everybody should read called The Culture Map. It's not written on here, but it will be linked in the resources. The Culture Map by Erin Meyer is a must-read book. Basically, Japanese is what we call a high-context culture. Have you ever heard that before? No. If a culture or if a language is high context, it means you need a high level of context to understand it. Japanese is actually the highest context language in the world, meaning you can't understand what people mean without an understanding of the context. Incidentally, American English, not British English. British English is closer to Japanese, not much, but closer. American English is actually the lowest context culture in the world, meaning what American people say is exactly what they mean. It's very clear. We say this, we mean this. Great example of this. Anybody familiar with Nikki's Kitchen? Nikki's Kitchen. It might only be in Tokyo. I'm not sure if it's outside of Tokyo or not. Nikki's Kitchen is an online, it's a cooking school, basically. The way she set it up is people can book cooking classes with people from all over the world. And you go to their house and they teach you how to cook. A friend of mine is from Sri Lanka and she's one of the teachers for them. So people can book online, I want to learn Sri Lankan cooking. So I'm going to go to this person's house and I'm going to have a cooking lesson and then I'm going to go home and that's it. She started this business originally because people kept saying to her, her foreign friends kept saying, I want to make friends with Japanese people. But when I say to Japanese people, next time, come to my house sometime, I'll cook for you. They always say, yeah, I'd love that. But they never come. Why not? But of course, when people in Japan say, please come to our house next time, 今度うちに遊びに来てください. It's not necessarily meant literally. Whereas if you say to an American person or a British person, come to our house next time, I pull out my diary. Oh, okay, I'm free next Saturday. Ooh, that's not what I meant at all. And Nikki's Kitchen started because she noticed that foreign people got very upset about this. People would say, come to our house, I want to share Sri Lankan cooking with you. People would say, yeah, sure, I'll come, but never come. And then people would say to them, come to ours next time and see, I'd love to. But then the chance to go would never come. So Nikki's Kitchen was a business built around that. But it's a perfect example of how this kind of low context culture works in language. You have to know that when somebody in Japan says, come to our house sometime, it's not a direct invitation to come next week. But if you're in America and somebody says that to you, they actually want you to come to their house. It's all a part of the culture of language. So really the message that I want to share there is learn the culture of the people that you use English with. And more than worrying about grammar mistakes or pronunciation, that is far more effective for international communication. We've got 10 minutes left, which is just right for questions. Does anybody have any questions? If not, we've got 10 minutes to have a sleep. Yes?
Could you tell us a little bit about two-step speaking? Because setting a goal and do your practice and check your plan. Really,
yes. Important. Thank you for reminding me, actually. Two-step speaking is one of my courses that basically shows people step by step how to improve their English. And you asked me to talk about some of that today, but it's too much. So what I'm going to do is, well, okay, first of all, the goal, your why. Why do you learn English? Why do you speak English? In my experience, people who are very clear about why they do something tend to be very, very successful, because without the goal, things just don't tend to, you know, we procrastinate. We procrastinate, we don't do anything, and things don't really work very well. But you want me to talk about the exercises and practicing and the basics. What I'll do is I'll put some videos on this page that demonstrate them. So, I mean, if you're learning English, if you are self-studying, practicing by yourself, people tend to think, oh, if I don't have native speakers around me, how can I practice? But actually, you don't need native speakers to practice with. There are loads of ways that you can learn English and practice English and get good at the language just by yourself. What I'll do is I'll add some videos on this page that demonstrate some exercises that are very effective for pronunciation or for building fluency, shadowing and dictation you wanted me to talk about. So yeah, I'll put some videos on there, because otherwise you'll just sit and watch me just pretending to do it. So any other questions?
Thank you very much, lectures. And
thank you.
I'd like to ask about how do you learn the culture, for example, Japanese culture? What did you learn the Japanese culture?
That's a great question. It's a great question, and it's one that I'm still trying to find a really good answer for. The simple answer is by using materials that teach you culture. For me, the best learning materials are things like novels. Novels are always going to have lots of culture in them. I really like crime fiction, like detective novels. there's a crime fiction series by a Norwegian guy called Joe Nesbø. And I read all of those books and I learned a lot about Norway and Norwegian culture from those books. And then recently I read a crime fiction series by a guy called Xu Zaolong, from Shanghai, Chinese writer. His detective series, it's very similar. A murder happened. Who did the murder? You know, it's a simple story. But his books are all about Chinese culture. And you can learn a lot about Chinese culture from reading those books. The same for Japanese culture. I read a lot of Japanese fiction. When I was teaching, I used to be a secondary school teacher in Japan, first public and then private. I watched a lot of TV dramas about Japanese school life. You don't have to go to a Japanese school to learn about Japanese schools. Watch TV dramas. You know, they're a bit over the top, but you learn the basics of Japanese school culture. I watched a lot of dramas, a lot of films, and you learn the language and the culture all mixed in together. When I make teaching materials that I use with my students, I always try to include these cultural points in them, but films and TV is just as good. So, yeah, it's a good question.
You probably want to introduce us your British story programs. It's the best material.
See, I had... Yeah, she's a good salesman, because I'd forgotten all about that. Yes, I have a course all about British culture, which is based on what I just talked about. We should just swap, because you know what I do better than I do. British Stories is a course that I have, and it's based on just that. It's a set of stories about British culture. You learn the language alongside the culture. I found that very effective with people who are living in the UK especially, but also people who do business with the UK, who visit the UK, who like the UK. So, yeah. Thank you. I'd forgotten all about it.
I use sometimes a Japanese joke.
Yes.
Someday, I read an English joke, a book of English joke. Results, I'm not interested in English joke, and I don't understand what English joke means.
Yeah.
It's a different of culture.
It's culture. It's because of the different way that we think. It goes very, 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 very deep. Culture. There's been studies done on culture, like crazy studies, where they get people to look at a brick wall and American people see the individual brick. Oh, it's bricks. Wherein they say Asian people tend to see the wall, because difference between group, culture, individuality. Jokes are the same in that in order to understand the humor, you need to understand the cultural values of the people. Even English speaking cultures, I'm going to be completely honest here, I find American humor very much not funny. I don't really get American humor. Like, my American friends would be laughing and, oh, that's really funny. And they're just like, no, it's not. There's nothing funny about that. But at the same time, my American friends very, very rarely understand my humor and my British friends. Especially with my British friends, we tend to be very sarcastic, very ironic. We tend to say quite nasty things to each other. Oh, I see you've got fatter today. You know, my friend will say to me when my belly's sticking out a bit more. And my American friends be like, that's a really horrible thing to say. Why are you saying that to him? But for British people, that's how we are friendly with each other. It's like it's pouring down with rain. So I say, it's beautiful weather today. Kind of humor. I think it's a cultural thing. It runs very deep, but it's to do with our values and the way that we think and the way that we see the world. And you've just got to, the more you learn about other people's cultures, the more it becomes funny. But it's hard. It's hard to do. Joking in a foreign language, it doesn't work very often. So, any other questions before we finish? Sure.
Chanking.
Yes.
What do you recommend? How to make chank?
First, by looking at examples. Listen to the way that native speakers speak, and you'll notice that they're basically speaking in chunks. First, it's just knowing. If you know we speak in chunks, you notice them easier. Whatever materials you use to study from, whether it's a book or a textbook or a TV show or a film, just pay attention to the chunks. And instead of listening for words that you don't know, listen for chunks. If you write a word down in your notebook, don't write the word down, write the whole phrase down and practice as a phrase. And it takes getting used to, but once you do get used to it, it becomes very easy, I think. Hope that helps.
Buy British Stories program.
Or yes, you could buy my course. It was me thinking I'd come in. I'm not doing any sales today. I'm not selling anything. And you sell everything for me. or you could buy my book. And in my book, I tell you in detail all about chunking. But you can't buy my book because it's not printed yet. But you kind of can. There's a URL at the bottom. Eventually, it will be published. I promise. You bought my book ages ago. And I still haven't sent it to you, I'm sorry. Let's finish. Thank you. Thank you.
So present for you from
Oh, thank you so much. Can I open it now?
Yeah. Oh, white.
Ooh. You know me well, thank you. It's a very good choice, thank you. Thank you, thank you very much. Thank you. I'm a big wine drinker. For wine, beer, whiskey, anything is fine. It's also a part of British culture. We drink too much.